Morning, everyone. My name is Vince. I'm not going to be up here alone today. I want to introduce you guys to a gentleman named Josh Simes. Now, before you put your hands together, I just want to tell you kind of the quality of a guy this is. This is a guy who doesn't leave anything back. He's all in. I first met him raising money. Well, we met maybe a little before, where we were raising money for cancer ride, cancer research. So we did the ride to conquer cancer. And I'd had a flat tire, so I was biking a little bit behind everybody. And we got to the 100-kilometer mark, which is the end, because it's a 200-kilometer bike ride. You bike 100 kilometers, and you know, the next day you bike another 100 kilometers. So at the 100-kilometer mark, just before that, I caught up with Josh. And Josh was like, he was in the zone, going hard, flying along, until we hit the 100K mark. And we kind of stopped, we were looking around like, so where's the tent city where we're going to stay for the night and the bands and the beer gardens and all that stuff? Someone pulls up behind us. They're like, oh, no. It's 100 kilometers-ish. You have another like 22 kilometers to go. Josh was like, he had no water, no food. He was like on the ragged edge of life. And he just looks at me. He's like, I can't do this. So I passed my water bottle. And together, since then, we've been a team. Everyone put your hands together for Josh Simons. He's on our board. He's also on DFW, so you'll recognize him. He is also a vice principal of
Foundations for the Future Charter Academy.
That one.
Yeah.
It's not some sort of fundamentalist school. It's a really good thing, right?
Yes. Very good thing.
So, take it away.
Okay. So, I want to tell you a story about the first thing that I've ever coveted in my whole life. When I was in elementary school, we used to play this game called King of the Mountain. You may know it as King of the Hill or Climbing the Mountain. I've heard kids call it, they just call it Everest.
Everest.
It's one of those games where it's too dangerous to play now. It was okay to play in 1980, but it's too dangerous to play now. In the winter, when the snow was at its deepest, the plows that would clear our parking lots would create these massive snowbanks, which seemed meters and meters high. The reality is probably about 20 feet, but to a six-year-old, they seemed meters and meters high. It was on these snow mountains where we would play this dangerous game. And when the bell would go for recess or lunch, we would clamor over each other to get out there to the parking lot. We'd be still pulling our boots on, getting jackets on, and whoever got to the mountain first would go right to the top, and they would yell or declare that they were king of the mountain. Well, from that point on, it was on. Every other kid in the game would try to climb up the mountain and push or shove the king off the top of the mountain. Like I said, we don't let kids play these games. He started playing that, like, no, can't play that. The king basically defended his mountain by pushing, kicking, shoving whoever was coming up the mountain, down the mountain. And sometimes we'd get organized, we'd form groups, and we'd try to take over the king by having a team of invaders come up the side of the mountain. And it was in the chaos of one of these group charges where I saw the first thing I ever coveted in my whole life. As a group was charging up the hill, in my mind, it seemed like Braveheart, you know, like I'm leading the charge, I'm beckoning to my friends, come on, we can take it, hold the line, boys. Right when I get to the top of the mountain, somehow I get pushed face down right at the peak. And when I pick my head up, about 5 or 6 inches in front of me is Matt Young's snow boots. I know it sounds a little weird, but these aren't just any snow boots. These aren't these worn-out hand-me-downs I've gotten from my cousin or some bland black rubber bottom, nylon top, Sorel imitations from the Sears catalog. None of those. In front of me is this boot that's designed to look just like a space boot. It was rubber from top to bottom. It was silver. It could have been right off of the set of Star Wars. And Matt Young slowly lifted his boot up, and he placed it on my shoulder, and he shoved me to the bottom of the hill. And I didn't even care. I didn't even care at this point. I looked up. I saw Matt, the sun gleaming off his boots as he threw first grader after first grader off the top of the mountain. And for the first time in my life, I wanted something. I mean, do you remember the first thing you ever wanted as a kid? Was it a bike, a skateboard? I don't know, maybe more specific, a transformer, a Cabbage Patch doll, a certain pair of skates, a Nintendo. Maybe you didn't want anything until you were a little older. Maybe it was your driver's license you really wanted, or even the girl next door. Well, for me, it was Matt Young's snow boots, and I craved those boots. I coveted something. I thought about those space boots for weeks, even months. I mean, I tried to think of ways that my hand-me-down boots were not fulfilling the requirements of boots. And I told my mom, these aren't warm enough. They don't fit anymore. I even made a small tear in one. I'd say, look, they're wearing out. I need new boots. I took a little needle and pulled the stitching out where the rubber meets the nylon. Well, for the rest of that winter, I plotted and schemed for these new boots, but to no avail. This was, not only was this a time where I allowed our kids to play kind of semi-dangerous games, it was also a time when parents weren't overly concerned about their kids' feelings. So I got a lot of, you're going to wear your cousin's boots, you're going to like it, that kind of stuff. So, my energy was wasted, it was ignored. So I waited, you know, October. I'd grown out of my snow boots in the spring. My mother was going to take me shopping for school clothes. And I ran to the shoe department searching for the space boots, a silvery flash of space boots somewhere amongst the rows of boots. Nothing. I was devastated. I also was too young to realize that not every boot in the world was in every store in the world. So, you know, there is some reality to this. But I coveted those boots, and I had no way of getting them. And I remember what that feels like. Because space boots is what the 6-year-old version of Josh Simons covets. But what makes that coveting? As adults, now in society, for whatever reason, we seem to relate coveting to sex. But when we're talking about coveting up here today, we're not talking about sex, or at least we're not just talking about sex. When I spoke to my friends about the fact that I was talking about coveting today, 3 of them immediately raised their eyebrows and said, oh, you mean like your neighbor's wife? And it seems the first thing that's the first thing people think about when we say thou shalt not covet. And it's true, you could covet sex, but there's more to that verse than just the neighbor's wife. This is one of the translations of the complete verse. It says, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant, or his female servant, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's. But we tend to focus on the neighbor's wife. When I mentioned my topic to my friends, none of them looked at me and said, oh, you mean like your neighbor's donkey? They all thought of your neighbor's wife. And maybe what we should be concentrating more on is those last few words of the verse, the anything that is your neighbor's.
You know, when I was working on this, I found the same thing Josh did. Everything went to cover your neighbor's wife. So all you gay men out there, you're golden, right? When's the last time you coveted someone's wife? You're laughing. Straight men and lesbian women were all like, oh, crap, Bible's focused on me. But think about it. And I just came back from an intertestamental course, so Old Testament culture and history. Here's the reality. In this culture, the wives were property. I know to us that's just horrific, but that's the truth of it. When they said, you know, thou shalt not cover your neighbor's house, your neighbor's wife, it's like saying you should cover your neighbor's house or their car or their front lawn or anything. That's what it means in that context. In which case, all of us straight men and lesbian women are like, oh, now it's for everybody. So you gay men are back on this thing. Sorry, guys. But think about this. What does it actually mean to covet something? When I asked people, yeah, the first thing they said is, you know, it's your neighbor's wife. But it seems like it's more than that. And so today we want to spend some time unpacking what coveting means. Because when I ask you what coveting means, most people go, well, I just know what coveting is. But when I started to dig in, like I usually do, and all the people in my run group, I apologize because I've been doing this all week. I keep poking and poking. Well, is that coveting? Is that coveting? What about that? And it's really hard to come up with an idea of what coveting means. So Josh and I are going to take just a few minutes. We're going to tell you a few stories to start bringing up ideas around coveting. And by the end, we're hoping that you'll have a new way of looking at coveting that's not only helpful, but it's not one of those things where you're just like, well, I covet everything, so what's the point? And so to do this, I want to tell you a story by introducing you to somebody in my life. We've been together for many years. We've seen the world together. We've cried together. I've cried in presence. It wasn't maybe sadness, it was maybe more tears of anger, but it was crying somehow, right? We've seen a lot of life together. We have traveled from here to the Mexican border and back again on back roads. We attempted to circumnavigate Vancouver Island. You can't actually do that. Did you know that? There's like these big things. It's not even a road around the stupid island. Didn't know that. Now I do. We've seen more of back roads of BC and Alberta than I think I'm fairly comfortable saying 99.9% of you. Her name is Bertha. And she is my 2001 Honda XR650L. Isn't that a great bike? Well, when she was new in 2001, she was the very best technology available in 1993. So when they built this bike in 93, they haven't changed it still. It's still the same technology. Everyone else is getting new motors? Nope. The guys who designed Bertha were like, we're going to use the same motor from 1993. Suspension has come, you know, miles since then. You can go over bumps at Mach speeds. That's not what Bertha likes. She likes 1993 technology. And just in case you don't love bikes as much as I do, there was nothing good in 1993 bike technology. It's a piece of crap. So right now, she was old. When she was brand new, she was old already. And she's got about 40,000 kilometers on the speedometer. In car world, that's like over 300,000 kilometers. I've rebuilt the motor twice now. And this winter, this is what Bertha looks like. That's the inside parts. You're not supposed to be seeing those parts. Yes, once again, I've had to tear apart and replace parts of her transmission this time. So let me put this succinctly. Bertha was old when she was brand new, and she's older still. She's far from being in good shape. I've beat the living out of her. Do I deserve a new bike? Let me introduce to you folks the 2015 KTM 650 Adventure. Don't just take a moment. This could be a spiritual moment for some of us. Just look at her. Actually, that's a him. My bike's a her, that's a him. He is 50 pounds lighter than Bertha. 50 pounds lighter. Twice as powerful. Do you know the 0 to 60 times on that bad boy right there? It doesn't need to be rebuilt every bloody year like I've been doing. In a word, he is the perfect dual sport bike. In my humble opinion, the perfect dual sport bike in the 650cc category. This is perfection. And every year, actually no, every 6 months, I find myself on Kijiji looking for a KTM 690 Adventure, right? And I've been doing this every 6 months for years now. It's kind of embarrassing. But each and every time I've done this, I get right to the point of buying one. And they're hard to find. So when you find one, you got to go for it. I'm right to the point of like calling the person saying, yeah, I'll take it. And I stop. Because it really comes down to the idea. And it usually takes me a couple of days. Every 6 months, I don't learn quickly. Bertha, for all her faults, still gets me around the world. She still takes me on adventures. She gets me over the mountain passes, through the desert basins. Sure, she needs a little TLC. Actually, right now, based on the amount of work I have to do, she needs a ton of TLC. But she still gets me around, right? So my question is this. Is my desire for the perfect motorcycle, the KTM 690 Adventure, even though I haven't bought one, is it coveting? Think about that for a second. Is upgrading, even an upgrade as large as this one, and that's a significant upgrade, one that I deserve, of course. Even if I actually didn't pull the trigger, am I coveting that bike? Because think about the implications for this. If in your mind you're going, well, of course you are, Clausen. Every time we want something, We're coveting, right? You see a house you like? You're coveting, right? Someone pulls by you on the street with a fast car, and it happens to me regularly, and you're like, ooh, that's a nice car. Kind of want that car. It's coveting. Everything in our lives that we want becomes coveting then, right? And I don't know about you, but if that's the definition of coveting, I'm in a lot of trouble. Because I'm coveting all the time. I'm coveting right now. See the guy's shirt right over there? That's a good shirt. I'm coveting your shirt right now. So it's not as simple as that, is it? Defining coveting, when you first start, you're like, well, come on, coveting. But when you really get down to it, it's much more complex than that. And wanting something too much, at what point do I get to be wanting it too much? I really, really, really want that motorcycle, but if I only really, really want it, is that coveting? Think about it. If you define coveting by how much you want something, if I really want it, then it's coveting, but if I only a little bit want it, or if I don't really want it, then it's not coveting. That causes problems, doesn't it? Because there's a lot in our lives that we really, really want. Someone said to me this week, he's like, well, when I feel bad about wanting something, then I define it as coveting. We're part of the Christian church. Some people have said the Christian organization as a whole is the best guilt-inducing organization ever produced in the world. If we're going to use feelings of guilt to define coveting, I feel guilty about everything. Buying a new pair of jeans, if I don't need them, I'm like, oh, should I buy these? They look good, they're cheap, but I don't need them. I'm coveting then, right? This gets more and more complex. So coveting, defining coveting isn't as simple as we first thought.
So I was sitting at a staff event last Monday night. It was a school appreciation night. Sitting with coworkers, one of the round tables, you know, in a banquet hall. You guys have probably been there. And I wasn't really paying attention to the conversation. They started to talk about tea, of all things. And I'm not really a tea person. I don't put a lot of value in tea. I drink coffee, nothing fancy, just coffee. So when the conversation went to tea, I didn't follow it very intently until I heard one of the ladies across from me say these words. She said, I coveted that teapot. And I said out loud, jumped into the conversation. I said, what did you say? And she said, I coveted that teapot. And everybody was looking at me because apparently they weren't prepared to be interrupted. Because I was dumbfounded for a couple of reasons. The first reason is I can't remember someone using the word covet in everyday conversation ever. And here I am talking about it a week later, and this lady says it the Monday before. And the second part was, I mean, who the hell covets a teapot? I mean, like, I can't even get my head around that.
Do country western music listening men drink tea and covet teapots?
No, we don't.
We don't?
Nope.
Okay, good to know. Good to know.
So, I mean, teapots are so outside of this long list of things that I want. I just didn't understand. And it really occurred to me that, see, different people, different cultures, genders, religions, they all seem to covet and want different things. Even couples who have been married for years and years, they share pastimes, they share hobbies, they share interests, family. They can covet vastly different things. A friend of mine was telling me a story. He had been invited to speak to a group of colleagues as the expert in the room, and he was excited about being the expert. He was invited to be the expert in front of 200 of his colleagues as the expert. And he was really excited, and he wanted to share how honored he was to be asked with his wife. Seems reasonable. So he said to his wife, he said, did you ever imagine in your wildest dreams that I would be asked to be an expert like this in front of my peers? And she looks him right in the eye, and she says, no, but you are not in my wildest dreams. So, I mean, different people. I'll give you a second.
That's a good one.
You know, it really made me think. Different people want different things. And most of the time, what we want, it aligns with our values. It lines up with the things we love. But not always. Sometimes I daydream, and it doesn't take much. It's usually triggered by something I hear, and then I'm off. When Vince talks about his motorcycle escapades, if I'm going to be truly honest, I mean, I want that. Like, he tells me the story, and I'm like, I can picture myself doing it.
It's fine. Right?
But it doesn't align with my values.
You sure?
Yes. Okay. It's positive. I mean, I can't even ride a motorcycle.
I can teach
you. Can't
you.
Ride one. I know you can teach me.
Okay, keep going. Sorry, I keep
interrupting. It's okay. I would have to take the course. I'd have to buy the bike. I'd have to buy all the gear. And then I would have to ride it for a long period of time just to have enough experience to do what Vince does. And like adventure motorcycling. But then I'd be all right, right? I could ride off into the sunset on my new motorcycle. But what would I have to give up? What hobbies do I have now? Would I have to give up to become an adventure motorcyclist? Would I have to give up time with my friends that I have? None of my friends have a motorcycle other than Vince. What about the money I need to buy things that I need? Am I giving that up to get my motorcycle? What about the money I need to pay off debt or the things my son needs? Am I eventually giving up time with my wife and my son to become a motorcycle adventurist? And as amazing as it sounds, it doesn't align with my values when I really think about it. And there's nothing wrong with it for Vince.
Don't judge. Don't judge.
But I believe there may be something wrong with it for me. My point is, adventure motorcycling is just what I think I want. There's a line in one of my favorite songs that kind of sums it up. It goes like this. It says, "It's the weight that you carry for the things you think you want." It's by a band called Zac Brown. I don't know if country music lovers in the room. To me, coveting...
There's no hands.
To me, coveting something that doesn't align with my values is what Zac Brown is talking about. There's this weight in my life, and that weight takes up my time. It takes up my energy. And all of a sudden, it makes me feel like what I have isn't enough. So is that coveting?
Someone came to me a couple weeks ago, and he told me he's going back to school, maybe even full time. And my jaw just dropped. And then he said, "I'm thinking of studying industrial design." I'm going to be honest here. I'm not sure what body part I would give up, but I would give up a really important body part to be able to go and study industrial design full time. For those of you who know me, I love learning. Like, I love, love, love learning. If you've been at a coffee with me and you know something that I don't know about anything, whether it's camera equipment, flowers, whatever latest book you've read, I can grill you for 4 hours on whatever topic you know that I don't know. Because I love learning. I want to learn anything, anytime, any place. I love it. I just came back from that course studying the intertestamental period. Now, don't get all excited, everyone. Super interesting. Possibly even, you know, too fun, but... It was amazing. The class blew my mind. These are the kind of things I do. I love school. And if I won the lottery, chances are I'd be going to take industrial design and about 14 other degrees in my life. But here's the thing. We all seem to have been influenced by Greek culture, which says the material stuff is bad. You know, the striving for better, having these, you know, learning, that stuff's good. So up until now, we've been talking about things, right? Motorcycles and...
Teapots.
That's just wrong. Teapots. That part is material. So we can say, okay, that's bad. But that's that Greek side of us that's going, the material's bad. But learning, you couldn't covet that, could you? You couldn't covet something good. And let me just kind of key into how your kind of internal language around this topic. When was the last time you coveted the broccoli sitting in front of you on the table? Like, I'm talking like, coveted it. No? Need a moment? How about, when is the next or last time you coveted your physical? Not getting physical, your physical. And all you 40-year-old plus men out there, huh? You covet that one? It's good to... Oh, hey, there we go. Good for you, Vince. Coveting going to the dentist, you know, coveting mowing the lawn, all these things that are good and healthy things. But do you use the language, "I covet those"? Because I don't. Somehow in my head, coveting something positive doesn't seem right. And yet, I really would like to go to school and take industrial design with this guy. So the question I want to ask is, can you covet something good?
In the process of exploring this topic and discovering what coveting is and actually probably discovering more of what it isn't, I had many conversations running ideas by friends, relatives, coworkers, and some people had a real clear idea. You'd ask them and say, what do you think coveting is? I got to do this thing on Sunday. And they'd go, it's when you want something you don't need. Or another one that I got a lot was, it's when you want something that's bad for you. Right? A lot of people equate coveting to that. But most ended up, when I kept asking questions, being more confused, like Vince and I are. But one conversation and one statement really in particular stood out to me. I was talking to a person I work with, and we debated what it is for a while, and then I asked him the question. I said, can you covet something good, what Vince was just talking about? And had this long pause. He's a real analytical thinker, and I could tell that he was searching through his own mind for something. And what he said next really kind of, it shook me a little bit. He said, I covet my wife's health. And I couldn't respond right away. I couldn't get my head around that. His wife had been struggling with her health for years. He described his desire for his wife to be healthy as an obstacle to him living his life to the fullest with her right now. I mean, can it be wrong to wish for your partner's health so strongly that it takes you away from today, from the moments you share with the partner? How could wishing for your partner's health be sinful? He seemed to think it's when it makes you not enjoy the time you have with them, when it makes you not enjoy the time you have with them right now. And our talk today, as with many of Sunday messages here at Friends Church, might leave you with more questions than answers. But we're hoping that this message will increase your awareness of the moment my friend felt. When my friend said that, and he sucked the room right out of the air, he said, I covet my wife's health. I saw the moment, and I saw this kind of tipping point in his eyes. I mean, he knew what coveting was right then. Even though we struggled to define it, he knew it. And I think we all know it in general. It's one of those things you can feel. And even as a child, I knew it. At 6 years old, right? I knew it. Preparing for this talk, asked myself what was the first thing I coveted, and Matt Young's space boots came right to my mind. And I remember feeling that. I remember how it felt. I remember the moment, sliding backwards down the mountain, staring at his feet. And I remembered it 34 years later.
What are the things that you look at and say, I want that? But not just the I want that. The I want that so bad, I cannot be happy right now. Think about that. What's the thing that's pulling you out of this moment, out of being happy right here? Wanting my new bike? I don't think that's necessarily coveting. Bertha's old. She's tired. She needs to go to the where bikes go when they after they die. Maybe bike heaven. I don't know. But you know what? I don't think it's coveting until somehow I convince myself that I can't be happy in this moment unless I get a new bike. I think the thing that we saw, the thing that overlaps all the different things we talked about, it's this thing that says, I can't be happy without that thing. You can want something. I want a shirt. But I can be happy if I don't have that shirt. I can be happy without getting a new bike. And yet I can still really, really, really want that bike.
Most of the things we want connect with our values, and Vince values motorcycling. Adventure motorcycling, as I said earlier, is completely appealing to me. It intrigues me. Does it fire up my imagination? Yes. Could I spend a lot of time daydreaming about being an adventure motorcyclist? For sure. I can even picture myself on top of the mountain, mapping out my first trail. But I know I shouldn't do that, and I know I shouldn't do that because I don't really value motorcycling. That's what Vince values. I would have to sacrifice too much. I'd have to give less financial water. I would have to sacrifice my time with my family. And for something that I only think I want, when I dwell on something like that, I don't really value it. And it creates this weight in my life. Coveting in my life manifests itself sometimes as that weight I carry for the things that I only think I want.
Isn't it amazing how something can steal the happiness in this moment? Whatever it is, a relationship, a thing, education. I really wanted to have his education. I can let it go to that place where I'm like, well, I can't be happy until I get that education. I think that would be coveting. But if I keep it in the moment of going, you know what? If someday I ever get the chance to do that, I jump on it. And man, when he comes back, we're having coffee and I'm going to grill him for hours about everything he learned. But I keep it into that place of going, no. It's something I want, but I can still be happy here.
So as with most of our friends' church messages, and being a teacher, I have to give you some sort of homework to take home with you. I can't leave you off the hook. We want you to try this kind of on in the next few weeks. When you're at home with your friends, when you see something you like, we want you to try to come to that place where you can realize the moment where, if you're really being honest with yourself, there is a tipping point. There's a moment where you go from, hey, that's really cool, I like that, I want that, to that moment where what you think will make you happy becomes the actual thing that is preventing you from being happy right now with all that you've been given and all that you have. It's hard to define. It's not one of those things where we can say, this is what it is, you do this, you don't do that, you're fine. But no one can define coveting for you. It's one of those things you just have to feel.
But I think you can feel it when suddenly something, some part, steals the happiness from this moment. So not only do we want you aware of that tipping point, I want to try and free you up. We want to try and free you up. I was talking to a friend about this. So I said, what do you covet? He's like, a new truck. Like, instant, just like, bam, new truck. I want a new truck. He's like, can you afford it? Yeah. Do you need it? No, not really. I live in the city. It's not like I have a farm where I need to haul bales or something like that. So, you know, everybody was getting that Greek ethic of, do you need it? He's like, no, I don't need it. I said, do you look at trucks? He's like, yeah, every once in a while I go shopping for a truck. I said, is it stealing your happiness from this moment? And we were running, and he runs for probably, I don't know, a couple hundred meters. You can see he says, no, I don't think it is. And you could just see, like, his body release. His shoulders came back, his chest opened up. Wait a second, I can want something and still not be coveting. That's the freedom I want. That's the freedom I want for all of you. Sometimes we get stuck on the other end. If I want something, if I desire something, if I feel guilty about something, I'm coveting. I don't know that it works that way. Maybe we can be excited about things. Maybe we can want things. Maybe we can desire things and be okay with that. But then be very aware of the tipping point. When suddenly that thing that we want goes from, I really want that, to, I can't be happy in this moment anymore without that. When we started to draw the circles of all the different coveting moments we had, that was the middle of the Venn diagram. That's the common piece. And that's the piece I've been watching for all week. And I've had moments where I said, I covet that, and went, no, actually I don't. And I've had moments where I suddenly felt that tipping point and went, okay, Clausen, you need to be careful right here. That's the moment right here. So your homework today is this. Desire things. Want things. Go on Kijiji. Shop for a new KTM 690. Send the link to me. Do not buy it. They're hard to find. Please. I think we need to be free to have desires, to want things, even if they're frivolous, even if they're not functional. But I think we have to be very careful where that tipping point moment happens. And be very mindful. When we feel that thing tip, stop in that moment and go, okay, what just happened here? Is the thing that I want silly moment from this place? So that's your homework. Desire, want, explore, but be very conscious of that tipping point. Okay? Have a great week. Angie's going to come up. We have a food truck out. Stay for a while, hang out, visit with some people. Everyone, give Josh a round of applause. Good job, buddy.